at the time?
I cannot speak as to what her mental state was. I can say that I believe my sister was in fear for her life. She was in fear for her daughter's life. My 13-year-old niece, who was in the back seat of her vehicle.
13-month-old.
I'm sorry, 13-month-old niece, who was in the back seat of the vehicle, which I'm more than certain that the officers were able to see that there was a child in a car. And they didn't have any regard for my sister or my niece as they shot 5 times to my sister's back.
We're going to leave it there, but continue this discussion and post it online. Valerie Carey, as well as David Montgomery and Eric Sanders, thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mastin.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Joe Uris and Abe Proctor. Today we'll ask, should we bomb Iran? This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cupid's Crusade, organizing a singles trip to Ireland, including 8 days in Galway City and County Clare, culminating in the 150-year-old Lucinvarna matchmaking festival with Willie Daly, the Druid of Love, as well as a tour of the Aran Islands, a feast in a castle, and more. Cupid's Crusade handles all the arrangements for September 2015. More at cupidscrusade.com.
Tune in to Ear to the Streets of Portland on March 19th for an interview with special guest Bay Area recording artist Goapele, who will be performing at this year's KBOO-sponsored event, Sold Out Music Festival, on April 15th. It's a night of special guests and performances on Ear to the Streets of Portland with Goapele and local artists Arietta Ward and friends, March 19th starting at 7 o'clock p.m. right here on your community radio station, KBOO. Tune in online at kboo.fm, on your mobile phone at m.kboo.fm, and follow KBOO on Instagram at KBOO Radio and Twitter at KBOO.
Tune in to Prison Pipeline on March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. to hear part two of Maya Shenhar speaking about her book, Locked Down, Locked Out, Why Prison Doesn't Work, and How We Can Do Better. Professor Rachel Cunliffe will also be giving commentary during part two.
Building a different world beyond prison is not just about knocking prison down, it's about raising up not only alternatives to dealing with conflict, but a world where people are cared for. If people are cared for, you're gonna see a lot less harm. You're gonna see a lot less violence, and you're gonna see fewer survival times too.
Again, that's March 23rd at 6:30 p.m. for part two of this conversation with Maya Shenhar.
Let's bomb Iran, just like Japan, for it be grand. We'll turn the rocks into pebbles, the pebbles in the sand. Let's bomb Iran. I'm here at the dance, trying to advance. Nothing else is working, so I thought I'd take a chance and bomb Iran.
Bomb Iran. That's the song, man.
That is it.
Yeah, that's the big hit of what, 1979, 1980, was that?
Idiocy song.
Yeah, definitely an idiocy
but
song.
But we're going to have an idiocy policy. We'll talk about Iran today.
We're going to talk about Iran today.
Yeah.
We played that song because I want to circle back later to this notion that there has been a faction among conservative Americans that have wanted to go to war with Iran for a very long time.
Well, I think it's more than a faction. I actually think it's an article of faith. Mm-hmm. Of I don't know the percentage of Americans or the percentage mm-hmm. of Republicans or, but a lot, mm-hmm. and it's really serious, and it's in league, unfortunately, with the current government in Israel.
Right. So when you're assessing the United States' modern relationship with the Islamic Republic of Iran, the key date in question really is 1953.
Yeah, and but before
famous,
we
got a little background before that. Joe's going to take us back deeper into the sands of time.
But I also want to tell people, in case you just tuned in, that you're listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. The number to call, 231-8187. And we are going to talk a bunch about Iran and probably inevitably drift into the current weirdness of Netanyahu, who is up for election today.
Oh, today.
Not coincidental. Not coincidental. And the fact that that Netanyahu had the audacity, under the encouragement of the current right-wing Republican weirdness, to come into Congress and lecture the President of the United States on the dangers of Iran.
And we bring up current right-wing Republican weirdness because things just got a lot weirder, and we're going to go into that as well.
Okay.
So take us back before 1953, if you will.
Well, first of all, I think everyone should know that Iran, as a civilization, goes back 6,000 years. Now, they can say, well, that doesn't matter. Well, it does, actually, because traditions are very important in the world. And even though we scrubbed the continent clean of its original inhabitants and civilizations here, Iran persisted. It persisted in wars against the Greeks. It persisted when it was conquered by Alexander the Great, who was Macedonian.
It was called Persia back then.
Yeah, called Persia.
Yeah.
And very, very, very high level of civilization, very accomplished.
Yeah, but one of the great ancient civilizations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But jump ahead. In World War II, the Iranian government essentially was created to be a democracy by the agreement of the original four powers. And
who were the original four powers?
Oh, the original four powers were the Soviet Union, the United States, Great Britain, and
France.
Yeah. And essentially, this was a very important idea. A legal government was created. A elected government was created with two parliamentary houses. And the most important figure in all of that was the Prime Minister, Mohammad Mossadegh.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a Democrat, small d. But his government essentially wanted to lay claim to the vast wealth of the Iranian oil fields. And those oil fields had been dominated up to that time by the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, which is
really a British company.
A British company with American investment. And when he nationalized those oil fields, that was all she wrote as far as the U.S. and Great Britain were concerned.
Yeah, Britain wanted to topple Mossadegh's government, but needed the backing of the United States, and the Eisenhower administration was apparently pretty easy to convince on that score.
Right.
And this is not just conjecture. This is not conspiracy theory. The CIA came clean about this in 2013.
That recently.
And you can read all about it. They admitted to the fact that they were complicit in the coup that subsequently toppled the Mossadegh government, the democratically elected Mossadegh government.
Well, in fact, they created a pseudo mass movement throughout Iran, and they created chaos using money, essentially, and the loyalty of people who were opposed to that existing legitimate elected government, and they toppled it. And they put in place the old regime of the Shah, the Pahlavi family.
Shah being a loosely equivalent with king.
Well, emperor.
Emperor.
Yeah, yeah, king, emperor. And that government, in order to secure its power, created a secret terrorist organization, government terrorist organization, which was called the Savak. Mm. And the way in which they operated was anybody who was thought to be an enemy of the Shah or of the existing new government or of the United States would be called in, tortured, raped. That was apparently part of the style, particularly, of course, women, but men as well.
That hasn't gone out of style.
No, unfortunately. And then killed. And there were huge, huge numbers of people killed. And that government operated on the basis of terror with the support of the United States until the Shah was overthrown.
Right. It seems that the Iranian people didn't take too kindly to the fact that their democratically elected leader was ousted by a CIA and British-backed coup.
Well, you know how they are.
They took offense.
Yeah, you know how they are.
This is one of the early examples of democracy being inconvenient to global capitalism.
Well, and inconvenient to the interests of nation states, which sponsor global capitalism.
Right.
Anyway, the Shah was an ill man. He'd been kicked out in 79 and was replaced by a revolutionary government, which eventually emerged was the creation of an Islamic Republic.
Yes.
With a guy named Khomeini, who'd been living in France, who ran things, who dominated things from 79 to 89.
This is the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Right.
Right. So we ended up with a reactionary right-wing religious fundamentalist government in Iran, which was far more intractable than the Mossadegh regime would have been. This was a prime example of blowback and an example of why it's not a good idea for powers like the United States or Great Britain to go meddling in the affairs of other nation states.
I don't know. It worked for a while.
Well,
a lot of oil got pumped.
Yeah, I suppose.
At any rate, one of the most important issues here is to understand the politics of Islam. There are two major, and there are more than two branches of Islam, but two major sects, if you will, divisions of Islam. There are the Shia, mm-hmm. who dominate Iran and most of eastern Iraq,
yep.
and elsewhere in that region. And then there are the Sunni, which mm-hmm. is the largest single sect of,
yep.
of Islam.
And that division is roughly analogous to the Protestant Catholic split in the Christian world.
Roughly.
Roughly analogous.
Right. And, yep. you know, with the same kind of brutal fighting.
Yes.
And deep concern for what's right.
Right.
The Shia mourn the death of who they thought was the legitimate spokesperson for Muhammad. And they were very much repressed throughout the history of this region with Sunni dominance. And it's really, really, really important to understand in the Middle East the whole complex of interests of the United States together with the interests of others. One of the things that can't be ignored, and I just want to throw this in, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, is the great mythology in the creation of the State of Israel. Now, normally this wouldn't even be relevant, but it's become more and more relevant as Netanyahu has become a dominant figure. We'll see if he survives today's elections in Israel, which I think he will, because the way in which the structure of Israeli government is, he will get a lot of power, even though he won't win, probably. But the argument, the fiction that I grew up with when I was a little child was, of course, the idea that the Jewish people could not reasonably survive as citizens of the rest of the world, because it had been demonstrated after the murder of 6 million Jews that the Jewish people could never be comfortable outside of their own homeland. So there became a kind of revivalist movement to restore the Jewish people to a virtually mythic homeland in Israel. And the argument was essentially a land without people for a people without land. Now, the only thing wrong with that myth...
Because there were people there.
Yeah,
it
the
wasn't
problem
the
was
land
there were people there.
Millions and millions of them.
Okay, so I just wanted to throw that in there because it really does play a major role in all of this.
Right. And after the creation of the State of Israel, it was almost immediately in a more or less constant state of war that lasted for quite a while.
Yeah.
A series of wars that Israel ended up having the upper hand in pretty decisively, managed to even expand its borders. So the feeling is that Israel must exist as more or less an armed state surrounded by enemies. And thus, it is a very militaristic culture, aided by the United States to the tune of a few billion dollars in military aid every single year. Every Israeli citizen, man and woman, must serve compulsorily.
Except for the ultra-Orthodox.
Jewish oh, really?
People. Yeah.
I didn't know
They're
that.
They're exempt. They're exempt from the military
right.
service. I don't know if that's changed recently, but...
So there's this feeling that Israel exists in a constant existential crisis, that if it lets down its guard at any time, it will be engulfed by its hostile Islamic neighbors. And foremost, or prominent fear in this mindset is that one of its Islamic neighbors will develop a nuclear weapon and use it to turn Israel into glass.
And of course, it's important to understand that Israel stole nuclear bombs, mm-hmm. actual bombs. I don't know if you know this or not, but actually stole bombs and ended up, the U.S. government said, whoa, they stole these bombs. And the U.S. government people met and said, well, that's okay. They're our ally.
Yeah. And I've heard that Israel has since manufactured its own bombs. I don't know if that's true. There's also a rumor that, and this is probably fanciful, that there is always an airplane aloft in Israeli airspace with a bomb on it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true.
And it always stays up. It only touches down to refuel, and it's always ready to drop that bomb on somebody.
Well, that's possibly mythic, but we don't know. And really important to all of this is the rise of a different kind of fascist governmental system within the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein being the typical example of that. And he went to war against Iran. Really a war over oil, I think.
Yes.
And it was a horrible war.
Nominally a religious war.
Yes. And by the way, Saddam Hussein was Sunni. The majority of the people to the east in Iraq, remember, being a country created by the Western powers after World War I, went to war. And there was a horrible war. It was really a horrible war. And Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons.
Yes, supplied to him by the United States.
Yeah.
Our dog in that fight was Iraq and Saddam Hussein. We armed his army. We provided them with, as you mentioned, chemical weapons and funds to conduct this war against Iran.
It went on and on and on.
It went on and on and on. And in the midst of this was the Iranian hostage crisis of 1979 to 81, in which a number of the U.S. embassy was essentially stormed in Tehran, and a number of Americans taken hostage and held for a couple of years. And it was President Carter's, the perceived inability of President Carter to get those hostages out is widely considered to be a factor in his electoral defeat to Ronald Reagan in 1980.
Well, in fact, there is some evidence, not conclusive, that agents of the would-be President Reagan encouraged Iran not to release those hostages.
Yes.
Until after the election.
And it has been reported that George H.W. Bush himself had a meeting in Prague with Iranian officials, at which he asked that the hostages not be released until after Reagan's inauguration. And they famously were right after Reagan was inaugurated president.
Well, as he was being inaugurated.
Coincidence, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm sure.
So we're just setting things up for what I think is a setup for another horrible war in the Middle East.
Right. So what happened recently to bring this back to the news?
Yeah, what happened
recently? Couple of things. As you mentioned, the Republican House of Representatives invited Benjamin Netanyahu to come address Congress on the subject of Iran. Netanyahu explicitly spoke against the current negotiations underway between President Obama's administration and the Iranian government. A few other nations are involved. Netanyahu, who has very conveniently, as a warmonger, used the specter of an Islamic nuclear state to gain political advantage in Israel. He spoke against these negotiations, saying that if we don't continue our hardline stance against Iran, including the economic sanctions, the crippling economic sanctions that are in place, that Iran would soon develop an atomic bomb and by extension, use that bomb against Israel. Netanyahu has said the same thing at several points in his career, and it's never turned out to be true.
But there is, and this is really an important point, it needs to be understood, the psychological dynamic faced by the Jewish people after the Holocaust created a permanent cultural paranoia.
I think that's true.
A deep fear, and the creation of the State of Israel didn't do anything to help that, because the State of Israel really was a nation created in the territory of a traditional Islamic people, the Palestinians.
Right. So what else has happened recently to bring Iran back in the headlines? Well, a faction of 47 Republican senators drafted a letter to the Iranian government and sent it to them saying, hey, Iran, regardless of how these negotiations turn out, don't count on them lasting because the next U.S. president, presumably a Republican in their minds, can erase it with a stroke of a pen.
Right.
So in addition to being, well, dumb, this was an attempt by the legislative branch to usurp the foreign policy functions of the United States, which are constitutionally delegated to the executive branch. This was just not only dumb, but really in bad taste. And unconstitutional to boot.
Bad taste. I like that.
Well, right. It is. It is. Now, and I say that sort of offhandedly, but think about this. Imagine if the party polarity was reversed right now. Imagine that there was a Republican president in the White House. And imagine that a Democratic group of senators did this. The right-wing blogosphere and radio sphere and the mainstream media would be up in arms about this. There would be calls for prosecutions, appointments of special prosecutors, and on and on and on. So this was really bad form. This was really stupid. And this undermines the potential success of these negotiations.
Well, definitely leaves doubt, has to leave doubt in the minds of particularly military leaders in Iran. Iran is anxious to negotiate a deal because the sanctions do work. And the Iranian people are lacking in goods and services that are necessary for survival. So it is a punishing move by the Western powers.
It is. So let's go to the phones.
Yeah, why don't we go to the
phones?
Who
do we have? Who's up, Steve? Ed, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Sure.
As far as the war against Iran, by Iraq, that was sponsored by the United States, so Iraq was really just a kind of a proxy.
It was, yes.
And you mentioned that it was a religious war, but I mean, that's sort of...
it was nominally a religious war.
It's sort of a marketing tool.
Yes.
For Iraq, but we know that the United States really didn't have any religious interest in that war. The war was against Iraq, or against Iran, was more for their own strategic interest and economic interest.
Certainly.
And Israel. Okay, and then it should be mentioned that Iran, because we're talking about bomb Iran, they are members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and they've been, inspected by the IAEA relentlessly. So through international law, they have every right to develop nuclear power.
Yeah, it's true. It really is true. One has to wonder about nations like the United States and others telling other sovereign nations what they can and can't
right.
do.
Right. They shouldn't be able to decide who gets nuclear power and who does not. I mean, Israel has nuclear weapons, India, Pakistan. And anyway, now, as far as, this story about Iran, it really has everything to do with Israel. And, you mentioned that there were other people in Palestine when the British, gave their promise to Israel, and included in that group was Jews. There were Jews, there were Christians, there were Muslims, and they all seemed to get along fairly well. But also, in this treaty that's being worked out right now with Iran, there's more than one signer or more than one country in those negotiations. It's not just Iran and the United States. And then just one last thing. You really have to do, if you're going to have a discussion like this, if you go back to the document that gave the promise of this land to Israel, it's called the Balfour Declaration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you know the first three words of the Balfour Declaration?
No.
Okay, well, people that are listening to this, they should look up that document and look at the first three words. The first three words are, "Dear Lord Rothschild." Now, you should make a connection there between who these people are and how, I mean, they are a very prominent banking family. They have very significant ties to the central banking system. And if you wonder why United States is such a strong supporter for what Israel does and doesn't speak so loudly when they break international laws and expand Israel, and they go mow the grass in Palestine every few years, Gaza every few years, and their connection to the Federal Reserve and all these things, you can start to put the pieces together, because this really is about the expansion of Israel. And Israel wants to get Iran out of the picture because they are the dominant power in that region. Anyway, thanks so much for taking my call, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for
talking
about the Balfour Declaration. I want to make a point about that because it's really important. This has to do with what I call perfidious Albion. That's fancy talk for cheating, lying, stinking, nasty British Empire. During World War One, the British were very afraid that they, first of all, they wanted to break apart the Ottoman Empire, which was on the Central Powers side. That's Germany and right. Austro-Hungarian Empire. And in order to do that, they essentially made a promise to many of the leaders of Saudi, what was not yet Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia and others, that those lands, including Palestine, would go to the Arabian peoples if they supported the British cause against the Ottomans, which is, you know, Lawrence of Arabia, blah, blah, blah. All of that was real. And at the same time, in order to keep the monies of the banking community dominated by the Rothschilds and others from spending money and putting money into the Central Powers, they made the Balfour Declaration, promising the same land at the same time to the Jewish Zionist community. And another thing I want to make clear, not all Jews are Zionists, though all Zionists are Jewish, until recently. Now we have this bizarre situation in the U.S.
We have the Christian fundamentalist millennials here in the United States.
Yeah, expecting, you know, until Israel is in the hand of the Jews, well, the end of time can't come, and until the end of time comes, Jesus can't come back.
Right.
And blah, blah, blah.
Right. And setting aside for a moment the notion of whether or not it's a good idea to wish for the end of time, we have to focus here in the United States on the fact that there remains, as I mentioned, I called it a faction of conservatives. You seem to think it's a little wider.
Oh, I do.
Who really want to go to war with Iran. Here's an example. This is from 2008. Let's go back to think about 2008, the presidential campaign. We had Barack Obama running as the Democratic nominee. We had John McCain running as the Republican nominee. And this was on the heels of an administration that was installed illegitimately by the Supreme Court and had launched a war of occupation in the Middle East against a country that had nothing to do with the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. So here's John McCain running for president in 2008. He's fielding a question from a constituent, or would be constituent, at a campaign rally.
It's well documented that we have, for quite a long time now, known where the real problem is in the Middle East. And in fact, the president adequately described it as the axis of evil. I guess my question is, how many times do we have to prove that these people are blowing up people now, never mind if they get a nuclear weapon? When do we send them an airmail message to Tehran?
That old Beach Boys song, Bomberan? Bomb, 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 bomb. Anyway.
Ha, 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 ha. Bomberan.
Yeah.
That man was running for president.
Yes. With Sarah Palin.
With Sarah Palin, yes.
Who could forget Sarah Palin?
I shudder to think.
Oh, I don't know. I thought she's kind of cute.
Yeah, okay. So this sentiment in the United States is alive and well. We can see it in the letter written by the Republican senators. We can see it in the invitation to Prime Minister Netanyahu to come speak to Congress. That invitation came from the Republican House. Conservatives in the United States love going to war. Can we all admit that? Is that a controversial statement? I don't think it is.
I don't think it's controversial.
Conservatives love going to war, especially when it's in the Middle East, especially when they get a nice religious erection over it.
Well,
yes, I said religious erection.
Okay.
Coming up this morning on KBOO, at 9, Alternative Radio features author and economist Richard Wolff on 21st Century Capitalism. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, news, and commentary with Chris Andre. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, at Stage and Studio on the program today, DMA Roberts features the healing spirit of performance with two very different groups. One is Well Arts Institute with their new show, Fierce Love, about parents of kids with cerebral palsy. Later in the show, DMA talks with a member of the Oregon Falun Dafa Association, which presents Shen Young Performing Arts at the Keller Auditorium at the end of the month. All this coming up today, excuse me, on your community-sponsored
and
radio station.
There's a point here on this Iran thing and Iraq. Remember that the Bush administration, with no evidence to support its behavior, spent 12 years ago, invaded Iraq, led to a disastrous war, which essentially we lost, though we pretended we won, but created the situation such that the new resurgence of fundamentalist Islam, Sunni Islam, could move through Syria and through Iraq, and we're now engaged in that war. And in all likelihood, we will be forced in the sense of foreign policy requirements, to move against the new ISIS movement, because it is truly horrible, and it is truly representative of the worst aspects of fundamentalism, whether it's fundamentalism by Christians, Muslims, or Jews, and that war will probably go on. You know, it can be a war forever. It's like something out of 1984.
It is very much that.
And apparently most Americans are either dazed and confused or supportive of this. Now, I say that it is not a small party that wants us to continue this war policy. I say that it is, in fact, probably the same percentage of people that believe that the entire universe is only 10 or 6,000 years old.
This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. I'm Abe, that's Joe. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. My apologies for my voice. I've got a touch of the plague today. If you want to give us a call, you can do so at 503-231-8187. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Let's go to the phones.
Well, wait. Before we do, wait. Hang on, phone person. I just want to announce that on March 19th, there's going to be an action at Northeast Cooch and Martin Luther King Boulevard. It's the east end of the Burnside Bridge. It's going to take place from 4 to 6. It's a kind of a visibility action. You might want to show up for that, and this is to discourage the reinvasion of Iraq.
All right.
Which I think is likely.
Oh, boy.
Okay, let's go to the phones.
Michael, good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, how's it going?
Yes. You guys are having a wild old time caricaturing and denigrating everybody who doesn't think the way you do.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah, that's our specialty, Michael. We are totally unfair and absolutely, absolutely wrong. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Abe said something about how conservatives never saw a war they didn't like.
Yeah, yeah.
So the opposite inaccurate caricature would be liberals are incapable of recognizing a threat.
Wait a minute. The fact that one thing might be true does not mean that the other thing is true. Do you understand? Your argument is kind of...
I am just saying that you guys are indulging yourself in inaccurate caricatures, and if I were to indulge myself in that same exact flavor of inaccurate caricature coming from the other side, that's what I would say.
Can you point to a war in the last 100 years that didn't have the support of the Conservative Party in the United States?
World War II?
You think
World War II? Who were the people who were the people? And there was a huge conservative isolationist movement before World War II.
Yeah, a very strong movement actually among both Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah, that certainly came to an end, however, after the attacks on Pearl Harbor.
Indeed. So anyway, working on my theme of inability to recognize a threat, which by the way I'm not asserting. I'm just saying that if I were to caricature as far as you did, that's what I would say, but I'm not really saying that. But there is an incapability of recognizing a threat from Iran, okay? So I want to talk about that.
The threat of Iran to the United States?
Iran, yeah.
To the United States. Oh, go for it, man. I'd like to hear
this. The threat from Iran. You know who Ayatollah Khomeini was?
Yeah, we mentioned him earlier in the show.
Yes, okay. Well, I tuned in about 10 after, so I might have missed that. Ayatollah Khomeini was the founder of the current Iranian regime, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Ayatollah Khomeini said, what I care about is spreading Islam. I don't give a damn about Iran. Iran could burn, and if it helps me spread Islam, I'm fine with it. That's what Ayatollah Khomeini said.
And that is dangerous to the United States because?
Okay. Now you take that mentality and you give it nukes. How do you deter that mentality when that mentality, I mean, we had mutual deterrence, and hopefully we still do with Russia, because we both have nukes, and they know if they blow us up, we'll blow them up. How is that going to work with somebody who'll be happy if you blow him up, as long as he blows you up and he spreads Islam in the process?
Well, wait.
That's not a deterrable mentality.
There's something fundamentally odd here. You're suggesting that a movement that advances by any means, I guess you mean, by any means necessary, the faith of Islam, particularly Shia Islam, that's important, is somehow a direct danger to the United States, and I'm just not getting it.
If they have nukes?
They don't have nukes, and they're not going to get nukes. That is not the issue.
They're not going to get nukes because what? They have how many centrifuges spinning right now?
I don't know.
ICBM?
All right, let's, for the sake of argument, say that Iran develops a nuclear weapon. What leads you to believe, A, that they would use it on the United States, and B, that they would be able to use it on the United States?
Because there are all kinds of ways to deliver a nuke that don't even involve a missile.
Well, in fact,
cargo container and you ship.
Well,
it,
right? In fact, if you're making that argument, the amount of unsecured potentially nuclear weapons grade uranium and plutonium that is just out there is huge. The very real danger of some kind of weapon being smuggled into some place in the United States and used to blow up and hurt the United States is very real, but it's no more real from the Iranians than it is from the North Koreans or many others.
Well, I think it's more real because the Koreans, despite how crazy they are not actually trying to spread a fundamentalist religion across the entire world. That's not the North Koreans' ideology. The North Koreans, no. I don't know what they're doing there in that concentration camp they've created for themselves. But
right. I'm glad you're not speaking in broad generalizations.
World. They're not trying to spread some ideology, a religious ideology worldwide that I've ever seen.
So if I understand your argument, it is basically that we must assume, since Khomeini, who is no longer around, said that he wanted to spread Shia Islam throughout the world, is his ideology is still dominant in Iran, and in fact Iran really wants to, by any means necessary, including nuclear war, spread that ideology all over the world, and is therefore a danger to the United States, whereas from my perspective, maybe conceivably, possibly Iran will develop a nuclear weapon and use it conceivably, maybe, possibly, against Israel. And that is a bad thing, but hardly something of direct danger to the United States.
Well, you know, if they use a nuke on Israel, and Israel responds by nuking every city in Iran, you think it will end there?
Well, that would be bad. That would be bad. But is that likely?
That's what will happen if they nuke an Israeli city. And you were talking about how Israel has always one airplane in the air with a nuke on it.
That's a myth. It may or may not be true.
Yeah, that's not a myth. I mean, I didn't say that's not a myth. That's not what I mean. That's perhaps a myth, but that's not the point. The point is that Israel has submarines with nuclear missiles on them as a second strike answer to a first strike, just like the United States does. So it doesn't matter about an airplane. Those nukes are out there, and they're going to be used if that happens, and that would be a really, really bad thing.
Yeah, but the situation, I think the only point where we agree with you, Michael, is that the situation is dire, that nuclear weapons are a possibility, not a probability, that rational minds must prevail. The argument that we might be happening, and I'm not sure what your point is here, the argument that we're really engaging in here is what should be the policy in the interest of the United States and the world, what should be the policy of nations given that there is always this danger of nuclear war, and given the fact that whatever Iran's intentions might be, they're a ways away from building a nuclear weapon, and even further away from building a nuclear weapon that's deliverable.
Yeah, but that's what they're going for, because Iran is a country that's swimming in oil. I mean, they have more oil than they know what to do with.
Well, what's
why do they need nuclear power, ask yourself. Why would they be bothering with all these centrifuges and all this stuff? They have absolutely no need of nuclear power.
I don't know, but I don't know that it's for us or anybody else to tell a sovereign nation what they can and can't do.
It's not a question of telling them what they can and can't do. It's like
very much is.
It's look at what their motive. This is the thing about not being able to recognize a threat. What would their motives be in trying to develop nukes?
Well, who is the they there? Are we talking about the Iranian people, or are we talking about the narrow
about
group of religious
the
leaders?
Crazy Islamic fundamentalists who run that country, who are still following the ideology of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Well, I don't think they're crazy. I'm going to have to say to you that so far I haven't seen their behavior, that is the Ayatollahs in Iran, being any more crazy than anybody else in this weird world we live.
Let me give you one instance of craziness from them. The Hezbollah, who's their proxy in Lebanon.
Yeah.
They captured the CIA station chief for, I think, Beirut. I'm not sure the city. They captured a guy named, I think his name was Buckley. It might have been William Buckley. The CIA station chief. Okay? They tortured the guy for months and finally killed him. They videotaped the whole thing, and they sent us the videotape. What kind of people do that?
The United States, Russia, China. Yeah. I don't know really where to end that description. The incivility, the horror of modern behavior is absolutely consistent. Oh, Argentina, I forgot. Guatemala. The behavior of nation states is indefensible.
Nicaragua.
You know, and all bad, and we should disapprove of it, and we should not support it. That doesn't mean that the logical and rational approach of the United States to Iran should be one which encourages that country essentially to be paranoid and to build nuclear weapons.
Well, okay, let me just say one last thing.
Okay.
One last thing.
Because we do need to give some others a chance.
Yeah, that's fine. I want to call Joe on a carpet for the previous caller to me was indulging himself in an anti-Semitic rant about the international Jewish banking conspiracy, Rothschild, et cetera. You should have, especially being a Jewish guy, Joe, should have called him on a carpet for playing that game.
Wait a minute. Unfortunately, I mean, I would love to, but unfortunately, the Balfour Declaration had tremendous amount to do with where money was being held during World War I and an effort to discourage banking communities in the world, and particularly in Germany, to not loan money, which essentially is giving money, to the central powers. That really is true. That's not anti-Semitism. That's real politic.
Yeah, but, you know, the international Jewish banking conspiracy, that's an anti-Semitic trope, and you don't do that. You know, there's ways to talk about whatever you want to talk about without playing that game, and this guy was playing that game.
Hey, thanks for the call, Michael.
Okay, thanks for the call.
All right, who's next, Steve? LJ, good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
I'm really good, sir.
Excuse me. What's on your mind?
Well, here's what's on my mind. This is LJ. I am also a fellow Jew, Michael and Joe, and unfortunately, I don't share Michael's view. All right, let's talk about the famous letter that was written allegedly by Tom Cotton, the freshman Republican from Arkansas.
No, not allegedly. He claims it. It's his.
He claims he wrote the letter.
Yeah.
All right. So now a little bit about Tom Cotton. Tom Cotton is drinking buddies with a fellow by the name of Bill Kristol.
Yeah. That's true. Bill Kristol has sponsored his career.
Yes, I guess he has. And during the campaign, Tom Cotton wasn't doing too great. So the Emergency Committee for Israel gave Tom Cotton $1 million in campaign contributions in like Arkansas, and the Emergency Committee for Israel is Sheldon Adelson's money, which is more right wing than AIPAC.
And Sheldon Adelson, just in case listeners don't know, is a master of the gambling world and pretty much controls gambling in Macau, which is a separate part of China, where gambling is legal.
That's Joe. That's exactly true. My problem with this is where do the Zionists come off to influence U.S. foreign policy. That letter was published and spoken about to undermine any agreement that the current U.S. government might reach with the people of Iran. As you may or may not know, Joe, even the Mossad disagrees with Netanyahu and says it's ridiculous for Netanyahu to keep on pushing the fact that Iran is gonna make the bomb.
No, in fact, I think there's a lot of politics that is underappreciated or unknown in this country. One of the interesting things about Israel in this time in history, when I was a kid, Israel, the myth of the land without people and the people without a land, was very popular. But moreover, a huge number of those people migrating to Israel were, in fact, socialists. They created the whole system of kibbutzes.
That's right.
And there was a great deal of equality and excellent health care and all kinds of good things about Israel. Some of those good things still survive. But in the last 20 years, the difference in income between the wealthy and the poor in Israel has skyrocketed, as it has in the United States. And in fact, there is now a great deal of poverty in Israel that didn't exist previously. So there is a real crisis going on internally in Israel, which has nothing to do, in fact, with Iran or with the dangers that Israel faces, which are very real, from other nations around the region. So what Netanyahu has been doing constantly has been talking about the external dangers and ignoring the internal contradictions that have grown up in Israel.
Absolutely, absolutely. There was a great little piece on Al Jazeera about a typical young Israeli couple who apparently the rents in Israel have skyrocketed, and these people are paying $800 a month for a little a little place, and they barely have enough money to make ends meet, while billions and billions of dollars are being spent by Netanyahu, et cetera, on the illegal settlements.
Well, that's true. But I want to point out one thing that's very ironic. The best news on television now, the most accurate, comes from Al Jazeera. But yes. Al Jazeera comes out of the Islamic
Qatar. Yeah,
world.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So, yeah, anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
And any which way, thank you so much for the show. Thanks for the dialogue. Let's give some other people a chance to express themselves. And my friends, you can only hear programming like this on KABU, so it's time for you to support KABU. Cut a check.
Thank
day.
You,
well,
sir.
We'll stop that.
Well
okay.
said.
Thanks a lot for the call, man.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is KBOO 90.7 FM.
And we're talking about Iran.
That's
Bomb
right.
Bomb Iran.
If you don't want to call, you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Let's go back to the phones. Joseph, good morning.
Good morning.
I like your name, dude.
Thanks. Well, listen, I just want to point out something about the caller before last. The guy is typical of people who don't get to know other sides of things, the other side of the coin. Mm. I read a book called The Ayatollah Begs to Differ, and it gives you some insight into the culture of Iran. Well, yes, they may have a few crazies running the government, kind of like we do now in our Senate and House.
Well, actually, less so now than a few years ago, but go ahead.
That's true. Well, anyway, those people, and including that government, does not want to get into a war. They're not like that. And you had a speaker on your radio. I can't remember his name. He's an expert. He's very, very good. Our own Defense Department, the DOD, and our NSA came to the conclusion that if Iran got a nuclear weapon, they would not use it in an offensive manner. And they don't even have it. As you well said, they have to get to 20% your enrichment, and they're over, it's something like 90%, and they're only at maybe 20%. So all of these arguments by these people are just specious. These people do not want war. And the Department of Defense and the NSA said, if they did get a nuclear weapon, it would actually stabilize the region because it would give the other side, Israel and the United States and all the other people that want war, pause, okay? So our own Department of Defense came to an opposite conclusion of what people are saying.
The only thing I do want to point out is I don't think the majority of people in Israel or actually anywhere in that region really want a war.
No, I didn't mean Israel. I'm talking about the extremists.
Oh, I see.
And I know that because there are Jews for peace. There are Jews for Palestinian rights. And anyway, thanks for this program. Thanks so much for bringing the other side and the truth out. I really appreciate you.
Hey, thank you for the call. Now, I don't want to start endorsing the idea that the presence of nuclear weapons brings stability to a region, because there's a more than a touch of madness in that line of thinking.
On the other hand,
I would imagine that were Iran to develop a nuclear weapon, I think the chances are remote that it would be used in any sort of offensive way.
Of course, that's a hell of a gamble. I understand.
It is a hell of a gamble, and it would most likely, I think, be a deterrent to an attack by the Israelis.
I think it's important to understand that mutually assured destruction and the discovery of nuclear winter as a potential reality if there were all-out nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the United States had a major role in discouraging the increased arms race between the Soviet Union and the United States and its allies. And I think that at the same time, the danger of nuclear war did control the behaviors of both the United States and, more importantly, the Soviet Union throughout the Cold War period. Anyway, I wanted to throw that out there.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. BT, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, I'm glad Michael called, because if I can't call, you know, sometimes he calls, and that people, your audience needs to hear at least one of us.
Sure. That's why we have Michael on upon occasion when he calls.
But anyway, I think for starters, Abe, you were exaggerating the seriousness of this letter from the 47 senators. You know, it may have been kind of silly, but it was more like a letter to the editor that they just CC'd to the Iranian government. Because if you look at this whole thing about traitors and it's ruining something, you go back to the 80s with Ted Kennedy sending people to the USSR in 1983 when Reagan was there, and then you have other Speaker of the House Jim Wright going to Ortega or sending a letter signed by a bunch of other people, and there was Kerry going to Nicaragua, Jim McDermott and others going to somewhere, Baghdad, 2002, leading up to that. You know, those are actually visits and talking. It was about policy.
That's true.
This was nothing.
But that's a little bit different than saying we're going to undo an executive agreement in a future administration. Those are two different things.
Hey, look, all they're pointing out is, says, hey, look, you know, this is a treaty, and they're just reminding them that there has to be a vote. In our system, there has to be a vote on this kind of thing, so don't get your...
So it's just out of generosity and goodness of heart, they thought they would educate the Iranians on our constitutional form of government?
But at the same time, presidents, going back to Washington, they do have authority to arrange things without, Congress knowing details. But, once something's done, come on, there's a vote. Treaties are supposed to have votes, even if you call them something else, like an arrangement or a deal.
Yes, that's true. And most of this letter is comprised of the Republicans in the Senate explaining our constitutional system to the Iranians.
Civics lesson.
Well, right. But that's just silly. Why do the Iranians need a civics lesson about the United States Constitution? Why, indeed, do the Republicans feel the need to interfere in ongoing foreign policy operations? It was a political move, and it speaks to the overweening sense of illegitimacy that the Republicans have about President Obama, or for that matter, any Democrat that happens to be in the White House.
Nonsense.
They view him as fundamentally illegitimate, and they always have, and they have sought to undermine him at every turn. And this is just the latest iteration of that.
Just
happens to be particularly tasteless.
Go ahead. That's nonsense. But anyway, to get back to Khomeini, this whole thing, this movement that's been spreading around the Mideast, and that goes back to even before the U.S. ever really was interested in doing anything, the 40s, the 20s, the 30s, but especially after Qutb spread his ideas in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And Khomeini is somebody who, even though the government there now may not be exactly like he envisioned, it's still the theocracy that he set up. And he's one of those people that really wanted to fight back, have our be against what he even described it himself. It's not what we say about him. You know, freedom. They hated liberated women. They hated democracy, and that's what's driving this. And they believe in taking over governments, even governments in the Mideast that are run by Muslims, even secular. I mean, they hated Nasser. They hated all these guys.
Well, how does any of this pose an existential threat to the United States?
Well, I'm not saying it does, but...
that's what Michael said.
That's what Michael said. Well,
yeah.
Well, it's one of those things, you know, I don't know if the domino theory works, but, you know, if you get a real powerful government there, you know, that they could cause... When does their aggression stop? That's the thing. Because they see things, they even say it themselves, East versus West.
Well,
East,
aside from the
modernity.
Use of... Wait a minute. Aside from the use of client... groups like Hezbollah, which is real, I don't see Iran's adventurism as anything after their disastrous war with Iraq.
Well, they've done lots of little things. You know, they blew up a Jewish community center in Venezuela. These were Jews that had absolutely nothing to do with Israel. They just killed Jews.
Well, actually, it was I think what you're talking about is in Argentina.
That's right.
Yes, that happened, and there is very good possibility. Let me finish, and then I'll let you go. There is very good possibility that Iran was behind that. Not yet proved, but it's very possible. There are lots of bad behaviors by lots of nation states, including Iran. And there is Hezbollah is really real, and there really is a fundamentalist adventure going on, Shia versus Sunni, but also Shia against Israel and against various other nation states. None of us are denying that. The question is it in the interest of the United States at this time to engage yet again in a ground war in the Middle East? And is it in the interest of the United States to provoke and push Iran into an ever more isolationist and aggressive position?
Well, I often say that even if we're not going to get involved, and I'm not saying that we should, probably we shouldn't, but I at least like people to know the true nature of people who are out there.
Yeah,
and
I
after
don't...
all, some people said that we ought to go to Rwanda. What was going on in Rwanda that threatened the United States?
Well, that's, you know, that's...
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, no, that's a real good point. That is, are we, in fact, the police persons of the world? And how did we become that? And do we really want to be consistently that? And I think that's a question that can really be debated on a lot of different levels. Our argument today is really focused only on the fact of the Iranian situation. And I don't agree with any analysis that says, you know, these senators send this letter, so what? No, it isn't just so what. It's really a deliberate effort to undercut the authority of the administration. And there has been, ever since the election of Barack Obama, an effort to disqualify him from legitimacy with all kinds of nonsense, including the idea that he's a closet Muslim, that he was born in Kenya, and on and on and on.
He's just a lousy deal maker.
Well, that could be. Yeah. That could be. I'm not going to argue about that.
Hey, okay, listen. Well, in the future, I hope to hear some shows on Israel because I need to call and discuss that, you know, and your listeners will find out that in order to create Israel, not a single person needed to be relocated in the original plan.
Well, the original plan fell apart
and
very
quickly.
And
even in the actual one. Okay.
Wait a minute.
You need to see it. Did you ever see a map of what Israel was supposed to, the two-state solution was supposed to look like in the late 40s? It was a hodgepodge of little circles drawn around things.
That's
Nobody
true.
Was supposed to be relocated, and a lot of Jews would have wound up in the Muslim state.
That's true. And in fact, the whole idea was more ideological than realistic, and there's no question.
They probably would have traded places.
Well, probably, but there's no question that there was an effort, a response to the creation of the State of Israel on the part of all of the regional Muslim states to destroy Israel. They failed utterly, and they did several wars, Israel and these various states, and in every case, Israel became stronger and more militarily capable, and in fact, gained land and expanded, and now the expansion is moving into territories that are really truly part of Palestine. And most interesting, Netanyahu has just said that there will never be a Palestinian
state.
Yeah,
you know, that all sounds like blowback on the part of the Muslims by making Israel stronger. So so. But hey, till next time, we'll talk. We'll talk about that.
Well, there's much to be talked about here, and there's much sentiment for Israel in the United States.
See you guys later.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Take care.
I think it's worth noting too that Iran's official response to this letter from the Republican senators was essentially, this is political theater.
Well, and it is.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, whatever else it is definitely political theater.
Yeah, that's absolutely
true. And I think
true.
That I think it's really dangerous. The situation is very, very dangerous. Most Americans don't know what's going on. I want to urge people to show up at the End the Reinvasion of Iraq 12 Years Later event, the Visibility Action Plan for Thursday, March 19th, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the east end of the Burnside Bridge. Why not?
Absolutely. And as always, read, write, speak, make your opinions known, learn more about this situation and others in the world that affect you.
I think I'm going to go to that.
And tune into KABU, damn it.
I think I'm going to go to that demo.
You do that.
I'm going to go to that demo.
That's right.
Okay, folks.
Thanks, everybody who called today. If you couldn't make it in, our apologies. Please try again next time.
And we'll deal with this at some other point, but not next week.
All right. Take care, and we'll be back at you next week.
Sirens, night and day, from the fires of the homeless. The ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Last Days in Vietnam, a film screening on Thursday, March 19th at Concordia University in Portland. Last Days in Vietnam is a new documentary from Rory Kennedy which examines the final days of American presence in Saigon and the efforts taken to evacuate 135,000 South Vietnamese. Again, that's Last Days in Vietnam, Thursday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Hagen Building at Concordia University, 2811 Northeast Holman Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First, it's Alternative Radio with host David Barsamian. Today, we'll hear a talk by Richard Wolff entitled 21st Century Capitalism. At 10, it's Air Cascadia presenting cutting-edge news, views, and interviews with Chris Andre. At 10:15, we'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, D. May Roberts features the healing power